Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. This is a program empowering you with truthful information so you can make the most informed decisions possible regarding your health and well-being. And I know from my own personal experience, the more I am curious, the more I am open to learn, the more I am willing to investigate, explore, learn about my body. And by the way, I am always learning. I am always open to what will support my health and well-being, the more we will find our path to health. So I am thrilled that you're here. And as always, I have a great conversation in store for you. And before we jump in, I just want to remind everyone, if you are listening for the first time, you can get all of the archives of my shows by either going to my Facebook page and liking me over at What Women Must Know, or you can just go to my website, which is drcherylselman.com, and opt in there, and all of these programs will get right to you. And by the way, I have another podcast on Progressive Radio Network every Saturday at 11 a.m. called The Love Code, and that's a very spiritual program. We have great uplifting conversations for healing, for transformation. So if you'd like to get the conversations I have on that program, all you have to do is like me on my Facebook page, What Women Must Know, or opt in to drcherylselman.com. Okay, so having said all of that, I want to get right to my guest today and to a great conversation, which is all about becoming the younger you. And who doesn't want to become the younger you? So my guest today is Kara Fitzgerald, who is a dedicated, amazing woman who has great, great wisdom to share with us today. A little bit about Dr. Fitzgerald. She received her doctorate of naturopathic medicine from National College of Natural Medicine in Portland, Oregon. Dr. Fitzgerald is the lead author and editor of Case Studies in Integrative and Functional Medicine, and is a contributing author to Laboratory Evaluations for Integrative and Functional Medicine, and the Institute for Functional Medicine's Textbook for Functional Medicine. Dr. Fitzgerald is on faculty at the Institute for Functional Medicine and is an Institute for Functional Medicine certified practitioner. In her book, Younger You, Dr. Kara Fitzgerald shows us how we can slow and even reverse our biological aging. She regularly lectures internationally and is in private practice in Sandy Hook, Connecticut. So it's my great pleasure to welcome Dr. Kara Fitzgerald to the show. So Kara, hello and welcome to What Women Must Know.
It's great to be with you today. I'm really excited to have this conversation.
You know, this is a topic that I am personally committed to learning about because we can. You know, I have to just share with you that, you know, I've done a lot of writing on women's health. I have a book on women's health. But as I move through each stage of my life's journey, from perimenopause to menopause to postmenopause, it's always an area of exploration for myself of how I can optimize my health and well-being at any stage of my life. And then, of course, what I learn, I love to share with my community. So this is a fascinating topic because I've always believed, and this is my favorite saying, Kara, is you can get younger and healthier every year. You can get younger and healthier. That's kind of my mantra. You can get younger and healthier every year. And then it's learning all the pieces of what is required to make that a true reality. So that's why I am thrilled to have you on the show, because younger you is the only way to go, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm invested in the journey as well.
So I always find it so fascinating when I talk to my guests to learn a little bit about their personal journey. So I'd like to ask you, Kara, on this journey, I mean, you obviously have such a wealth of knowledge. You are an academic. writing books, you are on the lecture circuit, you have a practice, but I'm just curious to know, how did this journey begin for you?
Yeah, okay, so going back to pre professional school, like all the way back in time?
Sure. What was it? really what got you on the path of getting interested in the natural healing path, which led you to, of course, go on to study as a naturopathic doctor. But what happened in your life that pushed you in this direction?
Yeah, that's such a good question. It's always fun to kind of explore that and answer it. I grew up with a mom who was aware of eating. You know, she was aware of healthy eating in a way that certainly those around us were not at all. And it came from my grandmother. Big were the authors Adele Davis. I think she wrote a book called Let's Eat Right to Get Fit. And, you know, my mentor, Jeff Bland, you know, was really influenced by that book. But so my mom was, my grandmother was. Carlton Fredericks was another guy who had a radio show, and he was talking about vitamins. So they were talking about, you know, eating healthy and whole grains and vitamins and whole foods and, you know, growing your own veggies and so forth, just way before anybody was thinking about it. And that influenced how my mom raised us. So we had a big garden. She would get these, you couldn't buy a lot of these foods in the store. And so we would get these packages delivered. And I was always excited that it would be something cool because I was a kid and it would be these, you know, these like buckets of grains and stuff that I was not happy about at all. And she had us taking brewer's yeast and so forth. And it was just how we grew up. I didn't love it. The threat to my mom as a kid was that I was going to eat a whole container of Oreos when I moved out, Oreo cookies. And I did. I mean, and I really did explore like the dark side of food after. But it was, you know, she had rooted it. I mean, we're going to talk about epigenetics. So she had really rooted it, this way of eating, and my grandmother as well, into my epigenome. I think they really made a difference there. And it was something that I came to deeply appreciate. So, you know, my life went on, and in my 20s, I developed chronic fatigue. I probably had mono earlier, and it was during a particularly rigorous time. I was working a lot. It was actually an interesting twist. I'll say that I was living in a Zen center. I was practicing a lot of meditation. Meditation can be like a full contact sport when you're doing it for hours. I'm kidding, but it takes a lot of energy. We're getting up very early, and you know, you meditate till late at night, and then layer on that, you know, I was holding a job and so forth. So it was involved. I was burning a lot of candles, and my fatigue returned pretty profoundly, and I ended up needing to leave. I moved out of that experience. I was there for maybe a year and a half, a little over a year and a half, and I moved to a little town outside of the city the Zen Center was in. It was in New Haven, Connecticut, part of Yale University, actually. And the landlady of the place, I started to go to various doctors, you know, just conventional doctors, and no one knew what to do with me. You know, it was psychosomatic. Really, no one knew what to do. And finally, my landlady suggested I see a naturopathic physician. There are a number of naturopathic physicians here in the state of Connecticut. We're licensed, and you know, we have authority as a primary care doctor in the state. And I did, and with, you know, really simple interventions, a little bit of CoQ10, some herbs, you know, some very modest dietary advice, I was better. You know, he got me better really quite quickly. Since then, I know that if I burn the candle at both ends, I am, you know, vulnerable to a reactivation of Epstein-Barr, so that can happen. But I get it over the years. I get it. I know what my triggers are. I know that, you know, it means I need to engage in a certain kind of self-care. And, you know, it's not a deal breaker, you know, of all the chronic illnesses I can have, or reactivation of Epstein-Barr hasn't been a big problem in my life. So his ability to get me better, and concurrently I was working in a health food store, and very enamored of all the supplements and what they did, and I was starting to find a passion around nutritional biochemistry at that early time. I remember reading about the fatty acid pathways in a book called Fats That Heal and Fats That Kill, and just really getting sort of excited about it. So him getting me better, combined with this experience in a health food store and my own history, you know, concurrent with deciding where I was going to go to medical school, would it be the conventional arena or, you know, now I was aware of naturopathic medicine, and it was just clear to me that I needed to, you know, pursue naturopathic medicine. And, you know, shortly thereafter, I was in school, often in Portland, Oregon. And just being in love with nutritional biochemistry, you know, my mentor and friend, Dr. Jeffrey Bland, was lecturing a lot out there, and I was really deeply influenced by him. And I considered going on for a PhD, but ended up getting a postdoctorate position under the direction of a highly regarded nutritional biochemist in the U.S., Richard Lord, at a laboratory, Metametrics, in Atlanta, Georgia. So I went there for my postdoc, was also in a residency, and that's where I authored the various books that you mentioned at the beginning. And anyway, that started my career, and then I left that and opened up a clinic, but continued to, you know, be steeped in lab science and educating other professionals. I'm on faculty at the Institute for Functional Medicine, but that's sort of how my path was born.
Well, it's an amazing journey. I find that so many practitioners are wounded healers. You know, we've had to deal with our own health challenges, and out of that, it revealed a path in life and a purpose in life. So thanks for sharing, because, you know, what looks like a difficult time or a challenge can actually be such a gift, right? Because it's leading us to our greater purpose. And
you know, what was interesting is that part of the reason I had entered into this, you know, somewhat monastic life, this practice of Zen Buddhism, was because I was looking for my calling. I was really in that exploration. And, you know, it's another story, but there it was, you know, born out of that experience, like immediately afterwards.
Well, intention and prayer is very powerful. They're a very powerful combination to fulfill, you know, what you are yearning for, your soul is yearning for.
It's so interesting. It didn't come in a flash of light on the meditation cushion. It actually took me sort of, you know, burning myself out from the experience, and then, you know, my path was opened. It's interesting. It wasn't the path that I was expecting when I went in there, but there it was, you know, what my calling was, you know, clear
there
day.
It was. And you know, it's very rarely a flash of light in a meditation session that you get
right.
That information. It's just traveling through life, right? It's just traveling through life and seeing what unfolds as you travel. And then when you look back, you went, oh, yeah, wow, that really was part of that intention.
So you've written
books before, at least one book I know of, before you wrote Younger You. What was it that made you decide to take on another project like this?
So the content that I've written, all of it has been, you know, for professionals. I've never written for consumers, you know, until Younger You. Some of our content, I have an active blog, and you know, I am on social media, and we do try to language that for regular people. But most of my career has been educating other professionals. So the case studies book and the lab book, and the Institute for Functional Medicine's textbook, all for professionals. It was embarking in the research study, looking at our diet, the diet and lifestyle program that we had developed in practice, that the findings showing that we could reverse biological age and being the first study of its kind, you know, the first randomized control trial to show that we could reverse biological age using a diet and lifestyle intervention, it was popular. It was just unexpectedly popular, really kind of the globe over, in the scientific community as well as in the regular community. We were written up in, you know, everybody from Martha Stewart and MSNBC and Yahoo to the Times of London and Ireland Times or Irish Times and so on and so forth. So just a lot of media surrounding our study and our findings. And I think the importance of the potential of reversing biological age pushed me to want to make our findings and make how to do this available to everybody. I worked with a ghostwriter, Kate Hanley, to help me plain language it. Talking about epigenetics and DNA methylation, it gets into the woods, into deep, deep rabbit holes quickly. And I needed somebody to really, it does. And so I just needed somebody to work with me over and over again for us to be able to plain language it. And, you know, pretty extraordinarily, I think we did. I mean, that's some of the biggest feedback we get back, we get on this book, that, you know, it's obvious science. It's based in my read on the scientific literature and on our study, but it's understandable. And I think, you know, that's a testament to the extraordinary skill of Kate. I would not have been able to do that.
Well, you found the perfect person because it is so important to be able to write in a way that can communicate these concepts and terms and possibilities. So people really get it. It's possible for them, right? That's the most important thing, is to inspire people and give people the knowledge, but make it in a form that people can absorb it. So let's jump into Younger You, because there's so much value in what you've written, an inspiration and a path that people can follow, which is always important. So why don't I just ask you to begin and share some of the most important pearls from your work that you think really have made a big difference for you and are making a big difference for other people as well who want to get younger and healthier.
Yeah. Well, I want to actually just give a little bit of the backstory on how I even, you know, entered into thinking about epigenetics, and because I think it informs the study and now the book. And just feel free to interrupt me if I'm too long-winded or if something's not clear. I have a clinic practice, and, you know, I educate other professionals in functional medicine, and I really was just kind of humming along in my career. But the epigenetic science, the epigenetic studies were sort of collecting fast and furiously, and it was probably around 2013, 14, 15, that I started to really pay attention. It's a new science. I mean, the word epigenetics, of course, has been around for a long time, but the massive outpouring of research is really in the last couple of decades. And it's a relatively complex science. I mean, we're looking at epigenetics is epi is above, genetics is the gene, and it's the study of how we regulate gene expression. Whether we're turning genes on, whether we're turning genes off, and how we're doing that. All of the biochemistry involved in turning genes on and off, and it turns out, so a lot of the research early on was coming out around cancer, And cancer very efficiently hijacks our epigenetic expression. Cancer takes over gene expression from us for its own nefarious end, for its own growth and proliferation. So cancer, the tumor microenvironment will turn some genes off to shut them down, the genes that protect us, and it will turn genes on, genes that allow for the cancer spread. And this is predictable across, you know, to my knowledge, certainly every cancer that I've studied, there's a plethora of these genes called tumor suppressor genes. They're genes that take care of us that are shut down, you know, in a variety of cancers. I feature a table in the book about these tumor suppressor genes and actually nutrients that can help turn them back on. So I was reading this literature, you know, at that time, and a key epigenetic imprint is called DNA methylation. So a methyl group is a carbon with three hydrogens, and when a gene has a lot of these on them, that gene is generally turned off. It's inhibited. And conversely, if those methyl groups are removed, that gene can be turned on. In functional medicine, we think a lot about methylation. So methylation is happening elsewhere in the body to a really pretty huge extent. And so in my field, it's something that we're wrapping our brains around, we're treating our patients, et cetera. My concern around cancer was that, first of all, fundamentally, was anything that we were doing or is anything that we're doing in functional medicine actually harmful in this arena where it's kind of scrambled? Some genes we don't want on are on, genes we want off are off. Are on. It's just sort of twisted and turned and messed up, and could we be harming our patients? And honestly, from that was born the solution of creating a very upstream, very safe diet and lifestyle program to make balancing methylation and specifically DNA methylation, you know, safe and potent. So we were using it in practice for quite a while. I actually, you know, lectured really around the world on this to other functional medicine clinicians. So, again, it was still in the professional space, but they were interested. In fact, I was mentioning to you that I had been to Australia. I was speaking there. And in South Africa, I mentioned earlier when we were chatting. So around the globe, people were interested in this content, but a relatively small pond, you know, those of us practicing functional medicine. So the question to me was, I have this notion that we were influencing epigenetics. Were we? And I was given a grant to be able to study that. Now, the leap, the really rather extraordinary leap, was that it turns out that aging itself, when you look at gene expression patterns, looks a lot like cancer or the chronic diseases of aging, you know, Alzheimer's, diabetes, cardiovascular disease, et cetera. Gene expression as we age becomes disordered in a way similar to these chronic disease patterns. So by designing something, you know, around wanting to optimize DNA methylation, you know, with an original eye towards cancer, you know, extraordinarily enough, the first analysis that we made in our study was looking at biological age, which is measured via gene expression, and seeing that we had actually reversed it. So that was our first publication, and it was really something of a huge aha, sort of never before seen finding. And we believe that by actually reversing biological age, that we are, by extension, reducing risk of all of these chronic diseases associated with aging because they share these similar patterns with regard to gene expression. So I want to stop there because that is a huge mouthful and just see what you think.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, I have worked with genomic testing, with nutrigenomic testing anyway. So understanding from learning about nutrigenomic testing that how we have predispositions that we can either enhance or we can reduce, right? So what we do, what we eat, what we think, what we're exposed to is impacting how our genes are expressing. And and everything is information that we're giving to our body. Food is information. So the fascinating thing about what you've researched is that through the diet, which I know we're going to get into and you can explain, can alter how your body is getting the information that can optimize the ability to perform all the key biochemical reactions properly or compromise that functioning if we're not following the diet that our body needs. Do I have that right, Kara?
I think what I would say, you do have it right. You do. I would say I might even be a little bit simpler and almost, you know, and more to the point, which is just we know that the diet directly influences, you know, what genes are on and off, you know, and that downstream influences, you know, all of the various biochemical processes and, you know, physiology and, you know, health or illness, you know, somewhere on that continuum. So, yeah, food is information. We call it, we speak about in the book quite a bit, so-called epinutrients. So nutrients that directly influence epigenetics or gene expression.
Okay, so now that we've whetted everyone's appetite, what do we need to know about the diet that's going to help support our body's ability to have optimal functioning at any stage of life, particularly as we get older?
Yeah. So it's very plant-centric. It's not a total plant-based diet. We do want you to consume some animal protein if you're willing to. But it is plant-heavy. So we want folks to be getting 2 cups of dark leafy greens, 2 cups of cruciferous, 3 additional cups of colorful fruits and veg. We want people to be eating beets. And these are the target, the nutrient, the overarching nutrient targets. And it's not a calorie-restricted diet, so you can layer in other things. But a good 7 cups of veggies a day, which can be a lift for some people, but for other people it's, you know, it's relatively easy. And we talk in the book quite a bit about how you manage this and how you can sneak in veg if you don't eat massive salads like I've developed the habit that I have. Anyway, we want you to have good seeds like pumpkin and sunflower. We recommend turmeric and rosemary that contains the phytochemical rosmarinic acid, lots of berries, garlic, green tea with a extended brew time of about 10 minutes, oolong tea. We want people to do some eggs if they're willing to. Eggs contain the nutrient choline, and choline is an important player in methylation. And beets, I should say, are full of betaine, which is an important methyl donor. A little bit of animal protein. We do want people a few times a week, if they're open to it, to eat some liver. Liver is a multivitamin in a food matrix. The diet is a little bit higher in fat. It's low glycemic. We want to control glycemic cycling. We recommend gentle intermittent fasting structure, so it's 12 hours on, 12 hours off for eating. We prefer organic or as clean sourced as possible, but that needn't keep you from doing this. So if you don't have access to organics, you should still move forward with this and just make sure you wash your produce carefully. In our study, and we continue to actually study this, and I've got some new research, our first cohort just went through, so I can report some more data at the end of this. But we have a greens powder, so more of those polyphenols. And then we used a probiotic in our study, Lactobacillus plantarum. Lactobacillus plantarum may help us, actually, a healthy gut microbiome, make a little bit more folate. We did not use any isolated vitamins or minerals, so just diet, a greens powder, and a probiotic. We had people meditate twice daily. We wanted them to sleep a minimum of 7 hours per night, and we had an exercise prescription of 30 minutes 5 days a week.
And what was the we'll go back to some of those points, but I'm just curious to know, so the outcome, so people followed this program for how long?
8 weeks. So that, yeah, so this is the study protocol that we prescribed for 8 weeks. We had a control group that did not enact the program, and then we had our study group that followed it for 8 weeks and met with a nutritionist weekly to just make sure they were supported in their adherence, because it's a relatively involved program. At the end of 8 weeks' time, so at the end of eight weeks' time, and we were taking specimen to be able to look at gene expression at a few different time points. But at the end of the study, we showed that biological age was reduced in our study participants by 3.24 years as compared to the control group, which, you know, again, still hasn't been shown. We continue to be the only randomized control trial looking at biological age using a diet and lifestyle program. So for that reason, it made the news. Biological age, being able to test biological age with the kind of sensitivity that we can do, is new. So more and more studies looking at what reverses bioage are certainly well underway. There's a lot of drug studies, interestingly enough. I think there are some nutrition and nutraceutical studies, but less so. But I actually was talking to somebody recently. I was at a conference last week who was participating in one. So they're starting to happen. I think this study showed it to be possible. When we started this study in 2017, we actually started study design in 2017, and we ran it in 2018 and 2019. You couldn't get DNA methylation tests outside of a research setting. We are starting to be able to do so here in the States, and I believe you can in Australia as well. But this is new technology.
Well, so did those people feel differently after they did the 8 weeks?
You know what? These guys were healthy, so they did not come to us in any, you know, in ill health. You know, we didn't look at diabetics or IBS. I mean, we actually did extensive screening. It took us, you know, again, almost 2 years, a year and a half, to actually run an 8-week study because we had to, we were excluding a lot of the folks who were applying. They weren't on medication. They did not have hypertension. They didn't have, you know, the diabetes or prediabetes, et cetera, et cetera. They were healthy. Most of them exercised. They live, you know, so they came to a baseline well. They were excited about being able to participate in a study looking at epigenetics because it's such a new phenomena. So we did not get significant changes in the quality of life score of our participants. You know, they didn't need to lose weight. I do think a couple of guys lost weight, but really for the most part, they weren't overweight. Their cholesterol did drop a little. Their triglycerides did drop a little bit. I think that that's because it can be a keto-leaning diet. And I think that suggests that they were in a modest ketosis. We increased circulating methylfolate without giving a methyl donor. So those were significant. There was a slight trend towards perhaps more energy and better mood, but we didn't achieve significance. And, you know, again, I think it's because we were looking at healthy people, which kind of adds a nice, we can look at it, you know, as the possibility of even a healthy individual, you know, stands to gain in biological age reversal. And our, you know, most recent investigation looking in women, so this first study was in men, and now we have the outcome of seven women who likewise were able to reverse biological age, again, also healthy, and they were able to do so. So I think it's, you know, it's impressive. We know the chronic diseases of aging are associated with accelerated biological age. So, for example, a diabetic is 6 to 9 years older. There's a couple studies demonstrating that. So when they measure biological age in a diabetic, they tend to be a lot older than their chronological age. So if we had worked with a population with underlying issues, I would anticipate we would see bigger biological age reversal as we restored them to health.
Well, that's so fascinating. So basically, through the testing of looking at the DNA methylation, so looking at how well the DNA is giving the right instructions for the body to do things that it needs to do to stay optimally well. So by measuring that, by doing that as the key measurement, and then diet as the vehicle that you were using to see what would happen if people followed for 8 weeks, a diet as well as lifestyle factors, right?
That's right.
You were actually able to measure and see the improved process, the methylation pathways were enhanced, which is an indication, as you were saying, that the body's working better. You're younger because you're working better, right?
So what we did was we looked at DNA methylation patterns on the genes, and our participants had basically rearranged their DNA methylation patterns towards a more useful pattern. So when these, which is just really cool. Biological age clocks use DNA methylation, and they're extraordinary. They're really, they've supplanted telomeres as really the gold standard tools. They're extraordinarily powerful and important, and will, you know, they'll become things that we will obtain regularly at physician's visits, and probably, you know, in the not so distant future, will, you know, not only be accessing them ourselves as consumers, but, you know, eventually we may have wearables that can give us information on our biological age. So I think this is a new technology that will be broadly adopted and refined. But what's so cool about it is that, you know, we can predict biological age with great accuracy from a fetus in utero who's a negative number to an early infant to, you know, an adolescent, and then a young adult, a middle adult, an older adult, a centenarian. I mean, you can look at these gene expression patterns via DNA methylation with just exquisite accuracy. But they're not a complete lock with chronological age, because if they were, then the only use they would be is that we could, you know, maybe do forensic analysis on a body that we don't know the age of or something like that. It wouldn't be useful in terms of measuring the aging process, because you know we tend to know our chronological age. So there's a little bit of wiggle room. It seems that the biological age clocks can actually show how fast, or it doesn't seem, they're able to actually show how fast or slow we're physically aging, and you can, you know, as compared to our chronological age. So we can be much older than our chronological age physically or not. I mean, and that's where the power lies. These clocks are able to predict morbidity and mortality with much greater reliability than chronological ages.
I love that. You know, I just want to say that, you know, that chronological age is just a number. It's a number. And it doesn't necessarily indicate how young or how old we are, because what you are saying, there are now ways to measure whether the body is rapidly accelerating and being compromised in its functioning, or if it is being efficient in its ability to function. That's the real key and definition of biological aging, right?
That's right. Yeah, that's right. That's right. And it seems as more research comes out, and I do talk about this in the book, but it seems that there's a programmed aging phenomena. So I have to say that this area of science is just going to change how we live. And it's happening pretty rapidly. But, you know, it seems like the changes that happen with aging, and this is why, so as I was explaining in the beginning, we started looking at epigenetics. I started to think about epigenetics with a framework of reading the literature around cancer. But it was a template for an anti-aging protocol because as we age, so in this predictable journey of aging, we start turning on the genes associated with cancer. We start turning on the genes associated with inflammation, with dementia, et cetera. We start turning on genes that we don't want on and turning off genes that protect us. And there's some suggestion that this is actually a programmed phenomena, like we're supposed to age in this predictable way, and it's not just sort of the wear and tear of the environment. And more than that, that it may be happening specifically on the epigenome and with regard to DNA methylation. So DNA methylation may be the driver of what we define as aging. I mean, I know that sounds pretty mind-blowing, but it's actually, there's some evidence to bear that out coming out of David Sinclair's lab at Harvard, where they were able to induce aging in mice by disordered DNA methylation, by changing the DNA methylation patterns in the mice. They were able to make them old. And then they made them young again, believe it or not, by restoring DNA methylation patterns to a more youthful state. They did this also in a mouse model where they induced a age-related optic neuropathy by changing DNA methylation patterns, and they lost their sight, the mice were blind, and they were able to restore the optic neurons to a more youthful pattern, again, specifically the optic neurons' DNA, and restore the sight to the mice. So we're gaining some evidence that the aging journey is perhaps started, or at least a big role is played by these changes to DNA methylation. And I think that's what makes our program really kind of special, that we can, that it's designed specifically to sort of sweet talk DNA methylation.
Wow. So I want to just go back to the diet because, you know, there is a growing trend in talking about methylation, at least in the, you know, naturopathic world, holistic world, and that's where we have B vitamins, methyl B and methyl, you know, the variety of the methylated B vitamins because they seem to be very important. And what you're saying is you can get the same results, maybe better, by working with the program that you developed, with the dietary program combined with meditation, which I think is really key, isn't it? Because you're reducing stress levels when you're meditating, mm-hmm. and you're, God knows what else we're activating when we're in that place of peace, and then the exercise. So I want to go back to the diet. So cruciferous vegetables are really important part of this restoration of methylation, of being able to have the genes properly turn on and off to offer optimal health. So can we talk about why people should be doing lots of cruciferous vegetables? And we'll throw in beets because they play a very important role as well.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it would be fabulous if all we needed to do was take a B complex and we could live forever, right? If it were that simple.
Yeah.
You know, like but it's not. And that's because DNA methylation actually becomes disordered. There's hypermethylation happening and hypomethylation. It's mixed up. So if you're taking methyl donors, if you're taking B12 and folate, you're pushing methylation forward. You're moving towards hypermethylation, which may or may not always be beneficial. We want to balance. So there's two components to the diet. There's two nutrient components. It's very rich in methyl donors. So we do indeed want those. We do want a high folate, a high B12, choline, betaine, so choline in eggs, betaine in beets. You know, we want a complement of the B vitamins in our nutrients. So we want all of those in abundance. I would argue that we want them in a food matrix, and we can talk more about why, and that goes back to my original thinking in the study, in the development of this program. But I think we want to take our B vitamins as much as possible in a full food matrix. But we want what we call DNA methylation adaptogens as well. And we just, that's a term that we coined. Actually, a friend of mine, Michael Stone, coined it. These are also epinutrients. So they regulate epigenetic expression, but they're plant polyphenols, green tea, turmeric, curcumin, luteolin, so going to the cruciferous, so sulforaphane, dienylmethane, these important plant phytochemicals that seem to have the effect of regulating where we're methylating. So we're not just pushing methyl groups forward and, you know, putting them on the gene willy-nilly, but we might be directing where they're happening with this rich complement of polyphenols. And so that's why we're leaning heavily on cruciferous, heavily on colorful veg. You know, we want the dark berries and other fruits. And, you know, just colorful vegetables and dark leafy greens. So we want this full complement. We want a lot of it because it both helps with methylation in the methylation donors, but then it may actually direct traffic of where DNA methylation is happening. And our findings suggest that that may be true because we didn't increase net methylation on the methylome, we didn't increase net DNA methylation, but we rearranged where it was happening.
Hmm. Well, that's so interesting. And, you know, it's never as easy as take this pill and you'll get this benefit. Right? The body is much more complex.
We evolved eating these extraordinary complex, you know, forkfuls of information to sort of good to go back to your original statement about food as information. Our DNA, our epigenome evolved being bathed multiple times per day in the intelligent wisdom of a complex, you know, bite of food. I mean, just think about the complexity in a salad. I mean, there are hundreds of thousands of phytochemicals interacting with each other on that fork. You know, then interacting with our digestive enzymes, with our saliva, with our stomach acid, and then, of course, with our, you know, rich microbiome. I mean, so they're just doing, the food is being transformed just in the gastrointestinal canal. And then, of course, we absorb those nutrients, those transformed nutrients that are key regulators of gene expression. And we evolved with this kind of exposure. A lot of my colleagues in the longevity space, and I'm very interested in this, but are looking at longevity through the lens of, you know, drug development. You know, so to your point, you know, a single intervention that would, you know, wipe out aging or completely reverse DNA methylation patterns in aging, you know, and just sort of fix the, quote, problem of aging. I think I'm not going to argue with those investigations. I think that there's a place for them, but we have to be considering, you know, in my opinion, these foundational interventions that we evolved with.
Okay, I have another question. Eggs. So eggs are really important. I know that after breast milk, they're the most absorbable form of protein, but we're talking about the fats in eggs for this program and choline. Is it best to eat an egg for this diet that is soft-boiled, hard-boiled, fried, scrambled, cooked the yolk? What's the best way to do the yolk in an egg to get the results we're talking about here?
Eat just lightly cooked, so soft, you know, soft-boiled, poached. I mean, those are the best ways to cook eggs. However, you're still going to get some of the nutrients, you know, regardless of how you consume your eggs. So, for instance, it can be very easy for me. So we recommend people consume 5 to 10 eggs per week. And for me to hit my target easily, you know, when I'm really busy, is just to boil, you know, 5 to 10 eggs at the beginning of the week, and then I've got them. I've got hard-boiled eggs in the fridge. I can grab a couple and eat them. So ideally, yes, fresh soft-boiled or, you know, fresh poached eggs are delicious, but it's not always practical.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that really turns the egg phobia around, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
We can get back to sanity again.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we do. We definitely need to be putting that debate down. I think it's, I just think it's really outdated.
Now, you put a program together, Kara. That's the Younger You program. Can you talk a little bit about that? We're kind of coming to the end of the time we have. But before we do that, I'd love for you to talk about your program.
Yeah. So when we conducted our research study and discovered that we were able to reverse biological age by 3.2, actually it was 3.23 years. I said 3.24. It was immediately clear to me that we needed to make this available to a broad audience. And, you know, you were asking me in the beginning why I had decided to write a book, let alone a book for regular people, you know, in plain language and step out of the ivory tower, if you will. It's because, you know, this is important information for everyone. And I want to just say, you know, speaking from the U.S., we are biologically aging faster in this country, faster than other developed countries, although we all are aging faster. The chronic diseases of aging, the biggest risk factor for them is aging itself. So we're spending, you know, billions, trillions of dollars on this aging journey. We may have a somewhat extended lifespan, although that's obviously changing in recent years, but our health span is not commensurate with our lifespan. And so, you know, on average in this country, the 16 final years of life are spent with at least 2 significant illnesses, often multiple medication. I mean, just think about that. You know, maybe we're in a skilled nursing facility, maybe we're in the hospital, maybe our family is charged with caring for us, and there's just burden after burden of, yeah, perhaps a longer life, but no health. And, you know, one of the reviewers for this paper said, this is broadly adaptable and needs to be put out into the world, you know, or they didn't say that, but just that it was a broadly adaptable and it's something that we need. Going back to David Sinclair's lab at Harvard, he wrote a commentary with a couple of other authors on the economics of reversing biological age. And they calculated that even 1 year of a better life and health span would save in the U.S. $38 trillion. And about $380 trillion if we were able to reverse biological age by 10 years. So the trajectory that we're all on, you know, including Australia and other, you know, and other countries in the world, really all of us, is one that is not good. You know, we've left health span in the dust, you know, as we attempt to keep people alive. So there was an urgency for me to get the program out in a doable and readable format, and that's the book Younger You that was, you know, published in just a month ago. It's walking people through how to do the program, what we did in our study. There's recipes and shopping lists. There's even a biological age self-assessment people can take. Actually, they can go to the Younger You YoungerYouProgram.com website and find the biological self-assessment there as well. But it's just the how to do this. We've got a everyday program that's a little bit less rigorous than the program we used in our study, and that can be an appropriate starting point where people can transition to that after they do the more rigorous version. But I wanted to get this content out to folks to, you know, just pave the way for biological age reversal for all of us.
Well, I have to say it's really, you know, an exciting revelation from working with this program that you have quantified, right? So we know that it's possible. That was just 8 weeks, you know. So if you stay on this for the rest of your life, you stay on it for 10 years, what could be possible, right? You know?
And, but it's not yeah, just, that's it's right. Not, now you,
go ahead, Kara.
Well, I don't think we're going to become teenagers.
Not using the diet and lifestyle program.
But no, but the point is that you can age healthily. You know, I mean,
yes.
the point
and
is
well.
That we can be in our 70s and 80s, not be on medications at all, have our faculties intact, have our energy, be flexible, be able to enjoy life until our last breath, when we can just let go at that point. I mean, this is a possibility.
Yes.
This is what I think about a lot, right? How can I die healthy, so to speak? Right, get to the place where we're not. And I just want to add, so much of this process of reversing our biological age has to do with changing our mindset. Right, we have to change our mindset. We've been programmed on so many levels that this is the way it's going to be. And when you get to this, you know, this stage of life, these are the things that are going to start setting in. And
that's
it's
right.
Programmed
that's
everywhere.
Right.
It's programmed in the media.
That's right. That's
programmed
right.
in our culture. So what I love about what we're doing and what you've demonstrated, and I'm just looking at the time, we'll come to the end, that you've given us a path. You've given us a program.
Yes.
You've given us a model to guide us to how we can mm-hmm. age in a healthy way and be vital throughout all decades of
yes.
our life.
That's right.
You know?
It's essential. So this science, the science of epigenetics, is the promise that we are in the driver's seat of gene expression and not our genes. We are not the victims of our DNA. We needn't be.
Well, I want to say we have to end it there because we're coming to the end. But people, if you want to learn more, first of all, pick up the copy of Younger You by my guest, Dr. Kara Fitzgerald, and go to the website, youngeryouprogram.com. Is that the best website to send people to, Kara?
Yeah, so that will put them in touch with the book and an app, as well as the biological age self-assessment. So that will put you into the world of the book and everything associated. You can find me and my clinic and all the other hats that I wear at drkarafitzgerald.com.
Okay, beautiful. Well, thank you so much for for your passion, for your commitment, for doing this work, for the effort to create the book, the program, everything you're doing, Kara. Thank you so much because you're making such a big difference in so many people's lives. It's just a pleasure to have you on the show today.
Thank you. It's been an honor.
And to everyone listening, well, there you go. Younger You, that's your destiny. So go for it. And until next week, I always want to remind you to honor the wisdom of your feminine self. And bye for now.